I'm very happy now to welcome back to the show Argus McCallum. He is artistic director and founding member of Teatro Paraguas. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And we also have with us Pamela Cher Verduzco and Xochitl Earle. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we're here to talk about an event that's coming up in both Albuquerque and Santa Fe called Poesía de México, Poetry of Mexico. And it's at the Albuquerque National Hispanic Cultural Center and the Santa Fe Teatro Paraguas this weekend in Albuquerque, next two weekends in Santa Fe. So what's it all about? Poetry of Mexico, how far back are you going?
Oh, we go back to five centuries. We begin with the Nahuatl, a poet named Nezahualcóyotl, whose name means hungry coyote.
Hungry coyote.
He was a prince, a poet, a builder, an amazing guy. This was back when the civilizations were flourishing in the so-called New World here.
What language did he write in?
He wrote in Nahuatl, which was kind of the Latin of the area. It was the common language that was used throughout the Mexico and Central America.
And that language and his poetry was actually preserved?
It was preserved. It was transcribed into the Spanish alphabet. And so those records have come down to us. So we do have the poetry, the Nahuatl poetry, written in Spanish with the alphabet.
But, right.
So we do have quite a lot of his poetry.
Is one of you, the three of you, reading that?
Yes, Argos is.
You're reading the Nahuatl poetry?
Well, actually what we do, there's a fellow in Albuquerque named Paz, who's a fluent Nahuatl speaker, and he has created a tape for us. So we will hear the Nahuatl.
Okay.
The actors will then repeat the Nahuatl in Spanish. And as we have for all of the poems and poets, we have English language projection, English translations projected.
Oh, so it's like going to the opera to a foreign movie. You've got the subtitles running as you're hearing
right,
it in
exactly.
the foreign language.
Yeah.
Or maybe not foreign language for a lot of people. Maybe Spanish will be the native language of some of the people who are listening.
We hope that people who, if they just speak Spanish or if they just speak English, will come, because we think that they will get a lot out of the poetry, both hearing the original Spanish or, in the case of Nezahualcóyotl, the original Nahuatl, and then be able to follow along, if they don't speak Spanish, follow along with the translations.
And so are the rest of the poems in Spanish?
The rest of the poems are in Spanish, that's correct.
And so you're going up and covering, what, every century from 500 years ago to the present?
Well, what we did find in our research is that a lot of the poetry written in the 18th and 19th centuries, even the 16th century, were pretty much Spanish poetry, kind of derivatives, not really an original Mexican voice to the poetry. So we go from Nezahualcóyotl, I get his name straight sooner or later, to Amado Nervo and Octavio Paz, who were writing in the latter half of the 19th century. And that kind of revolutionized Mexican poetry, got it away from kind of imitating the Spanish poetry. And Mexican poetry found its own voice, and it's been very, very strong in the 20th century. Lots and lots of really great writers. Part of our problem was who to choose.
Right, so, right. I guess it takes every new nation a while to find its voice and not just be imitating the old one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, you think of Walt Whitman and how did we find our voice here?
Yeah.
So we thought that maybe you guys could read some of the poetry in Spanish, and then we would hear the translations in English. Would you like to do that?
Yes, that's fine.
Sure.
Oh, good. Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Okay.
I have a really short, funny one.
So will you read it in Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
Or looks like you're about to recite it in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go for it. What is it? What are we hearing?
It's the title is Preocupación de Job, which in English is the preoccupation of Job. De repente, me siento perseguido por la buena suerte. Todo me sale bien. Tengo amor, salud y dinero. ¿Qué hice? ¿Qué debo de hacer para merecerlo? ¿Es otra más de tus pruebas, Dios mío?
And do you want to say that in English?
Sure. Suddenly, I feel persecuted by good luck. Everything is going well. I have love, health, and money. I don't know what I did. I don't know what I should do in order to deserve this. Is this another one of your trials, God?
Now tell us, who's the author of that?
Jaime Sabines, who's alive, writing. He's a contemporary
poet. No, he's not. He died in 99. He's one of the more recent guys. He was born in 25, died in 99.
Okay.
And he was very well known, very famous, very much respected.
And very funny. Yeah. One of my favorites.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, so let's hear another poem. Sochi, would you like to read one?
Yes.
So what are we going to hear now?
It's a poem by Javier Cecilia, who is a contemporary poet, very well respected in Mexico. Last year, his son, who was innocent, was murdered with a group of seven or eight other students in the drug wars that were caught in the crossfire.
No.
And at that point, Javier basically decided that he could not write any more poetry. He did form with other activists. He formed the Caravan of Peace that has gone all through Mexico. And they are now traveling here in the United States. They were here in Santa Fe on the plaza early in August. I think it was the 8th. And we did manage to speak with Javier, and he gave us permission to use this poem, his last poem, in our show, in our performance.
And this was before his son was killed?
No, he wrote this poem in response to his son being killed and said, "This is my last poem.
Oh my goodness.
The poetry has left me."
Okay.
El mundo ya no es digno, de Javier Cecilia. El mundo ya no es digno de la palabra. Nos la ahogaron adentro. Cómo te asfixiaron. Cómo te desgarraron a ti los pulmones. Y el dolor no se me aparta. Solo queda un mundo por el silencio de los justos. Solo por tu silencio y por mi silencio, Juanelo.
And would you like to read it in English?
Yes. The world is no longer worthy. The world is no longer worthy of words. They have drowned them inside us. The way they smothered you. The way they ripped open your lungs. And the pain does not leave me. There is only room now in the world for the silence of the just. And for your silence, Juanelo, and mine.
And again, poetry of Javier Cecilia. What a sad, beautiful, sad poem.
Yes, just an amazing poem, and poet as well. He has such an amazing presence. I hope some of the listeners saw him on the plaza in August.
Yeah. So let's hear some others. This is amazing.
Well, not all of the poems are so deep and solemn and tragic.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing. Like any country as rich as Mexico, there's a tradition of poetry that covers so many different
sensibilities
and places.
Yeah.
And
One of the other poets, of course, is Octavio Paz, and I have a short poem of his. It's called Mariposa, or the Butterfly. La mariposa volaba entre los autos. María José me dijo, ha de ser Shuang Tzu, te paso por Nuevo York. Pero la mariposa no sabía si era una mariposa que soñaba ser Xuan Su o Xuan Su que soñaba ser una mariposa. La mariposa no dudaba, volaba.
Nice.
And in English it goes like this. The butterfly flew among the cars. Maria Jose said to me, "It must be Xuan Su on his way to New York." But the butterfly didn't know if it was a butterfly dreaming it was Xuan Su or Xuan Su dreaming it was a butterfly. The butterfly had no doubt. It flew.
Nice. And of that, that's of course the reference to the famous ancient Chinese Taoist Xuan Su.
Yes, yes, exactly. Octavio Paz was quite an intellect, quite an essayist and novelist and philosopher and a man of many pursuits. So.
Actually, my mother-in-law knew him.
Oh, really? Wow. And there's some other poets, too. Hector Carreto is writing this these days, and his poems are hilarious, and they're also kind of racy, but in a very fun, innocent way. He has one poem called Chocolate Amarga.
Bitter chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll I think we'll save that.
Yeah.
We'll save that for the show.
Is that not for family consumption?
Well, it is. It's about a chocolate bar, but there are many things that have, that
you can interpret it as a spectator. Yeah. Is hot or as cold as you wish, or as sweet or bitter, I should say.
Well, that's one thing I love about Latin American language and humor, is that it has so many double entendres, and there is a richness of eros and sexuality that is not dirty. It's so natural and part of life, and there's so much humor and beauty and exploration and just heat in that, that I guess they're just not really infected by the Puritan bug that we have here.
Mm, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, there is the whole Catholic tradition in Mexico, but somehow
except Catholicism is not as puritanical as Protestantism.
Yeah.
Protestantism brought with it a lot more puritanical stuff. Judaism isn't as puritanical either as Protestantism.
And it's interesting. So that all of that shows up. So is there some of that flavor in the event?
Yes, yeah, particularly in Hector Carreto and Jaime Sabines, some of the poets writing today. We also, it's not exclusively men poets. We do have Sor Juana de Inés.
Nice.
We have some of her poems. She was a very interesting person, writing in the 1700s. She was the daughter of a local government official, but she was absolutely brilliant. And
a nun.
She became a nun in order to be able to pursue her intellectual freedom.
Yeah.
So, in her cloister, she had physics experiments going, and all the philosophers, Plato and all of that, on her bookshelf, and she wrote poetry, and
amazing. Those were the days when, if you wanted to be a female intellectual, you had to actually join a cloister as opposed to going to a university.
For protection, and also she also had the protection of the wife of the viceroy. Without that, it's questionable whether she could have achieved what she had done.
Do you have any of the Sor Juana poetry?
She wrote in classical sonnets, and so she does one of the poems in the program, but with a level and an intensity of emotion that was unheard of at the time, because it was all very formal and very romantic, very clever poetry of the time. And here she's writing in the exact form, but with an incredible emotional punch that was not seen until this century in most poetry.
By the way, we're talking about Poesía de México, Poetry of Mexico, which is 3 weekends of events in Albuquerque and Santa Fe starting this weekend. So, Sochi, you're going to read now something by Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz?
Yes.
And what's it called?
Que contiene una fantasía contenta con amor decente. Detente. Sombra de mi bien esquivo. Imagen del hechizo que más quiero. Bella ilusión por quien alegre muero. Dulce ficción por quien penosa vivo. Si el imán de tus gracias atractivo sirve mi pecho de obediente acero, ¿por qué me enamoras, lisonjero, si has de burlarme luego, fugitivo? Mas blasonar no puedes, satisfecho de que triunfa en mí tu tiranía, que aunque dejas burlado el lazo estrecho que tu forma fantástica ceñía, poco importa burlar brazos y pecho, si te labra prisión mi fantasía.
And now the English translation.
And I would like to put a disclaimer. I prefer it in Spanish. In English, the title would be Containing a Fantasy That Is Content with Decent Love. Stay, you shadow of elusive joy, image of the charm I most desire, lovely dream for whom I'd happy die, sweet cheat for whom I live in pain. If to the magnet of your luring grace my breast is drawn like faithful steel, why do you, flattering, snare my heart, then fleeing make me tender mock? Boast you cannot, though satisfied, your tyranny triumphs over me, for though you slip the tightened knot that once enclosed your phantom form, it little matters that you mock my arms. My mind has wrought your prison's lock.
And poetry by Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. We're talking about poetry of Mexico. So this is one of, it's certainly not the first collaboration that Teatro Paraguas has done with the National Hispanic Cultural Center.
That's correct. We've taken a number of these poetry tribute performance series and performed them at the Hispanic Cultural Center with the help of the Centro Recursos Español, which has an office down there. It's a Spanish government outreach, and they have worked with us and worked with the Hispanic Center to set up these performances, which are free in Albuquerque.
And low-priced in Santa Fe. We don't talk about prices on the air, but they're very low-priced, and there's also a Sunday's Pay What You Will, so
that's right.
If you don't want to go
that's
all the right. way down there, it's still worth it to go here.
Yeah.
How do these events go over? In other words, do you have a lot of bilingual people or Spanish-speaking people who come to hear the poetry in Spanish?
Actually, we do. And in fact, we can always tell how many people in the audience speak Spanish because of the laughter. You know, the laughter
right.
comes in the Spanish first, and then the English speakers catch up.
Right.
So it's kind of it's great to hear the laughter to the same joke twice or the same funny.
Even with the, do you read it also in English or should you just use the projections of
we
the
project
language in
yeah.
English?
Yeah, sometimes we, one of our poems has interwoven Spanish and English, but that's the way Octavio Paz wrote it, I believe.
Right,
it's called Movimiento.
Movimiento, right.
Is there, at this point, a genre of Spanglish poetry, do you know?
There is. We haven't really explored that.
That would be very interesting here in New Mexico.
The closest we've come is we did a poetry tribute to Jim Segel, who lived
right.
in Española from 1970 to 1998 when he died. But here was a young graduate from Colorado who came down to Española, fell in love with the city, fell in love with Teresa Archuleta. They eloped after 2 weeks. And
good heavens.
And when they came back to Española, any other Anglo would have been, you know, dumped in the river. But Jim Segel managed to become an accepted member of Española. He and his father-in-law got on famously. And so his poetry is kind of in Spanglish.
Right.
Are you familiar with 49er songs?
Not really.
Okay, 49er songs are Native American Spanglish.
Ah, okay.
In other words, how
I
you would say
I thought you meant the
it.
Gold miners.
No, they're called 49er songs. I'm not exactly sure why. But what they're doing is the rhythm of the song is Native American rhythms, drumming rhythms, and the words are English.
Very
interesting. And they're really lovely, wonderful.
So these are yet more examples of all kinds of cross-cultural poetry.
And they're very funny.
Yeah. Now, Teatro Paraguas has been around for 8 years.
That's correct.
And we've had you on many times, but tell people what the theater is actually about.
Well, Teatro Paraguas means umbrella theater. We actually got our start 8 years ago. My father called me up and said, hey, it's the 100th anniversary of the birth of Pablo Neruda. Let's read some poetry. And we got some actor friends together, and they weren't content just to read the poetry. They actually created a play around it. So that's how we got our start. We've done 33 shows since then. All of them are either have Hispanic or Latino themes or written by Hispanic or Latino authors. And mostly they're in English. We have done a few shows in totally Spanish, but they're mostly in English or bilingual. And we always try to construct the play so that a monolinguist of any sort would be able to follow.
Right.
We do have a studio, a 53-seat studio over near Home Depot on 3205 Calle Marie. And it's we've been there for about 3 or 4 years.
And you were at another place right next to it before that.
Well, that's correct. We moved one block over.
You moved one block to an identical place, which is
a little bigger. A little. Everybody says the new place is more pleasant.
Ah, that's
fun.
Good.
So yeah.
And so, Poesía de México, Poetry of Mexico, will be in Albuquerque at the National Hispanic Cultural Center on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this coming weekend, 7 o'clock on Friday and Saturday, and Sunday at 2:30. And it's free and open to the public in Albuquerque. And you may want to make reservations by calling 505-724-4743. And then on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 12th through 14th, and again the 19th through 21st, it is at Teatro Paraguas at the same times, 7 on Saturday and Friday and Saturday, and then 2:30 on Sunday. Sundays are pay what you wish, and you should also make reservations there by calling 505-421-1601. Argus McCallum is artistic director and founding member of Teatro Paraguas, and Pamela Cher Verduzco and Xochitl Earle are actors in Poesía de México. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
Fabulous.
And I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Christy Carson. She's artistic director of Santa Fe Rep, and she's director of the musical Working, which opens this weekend and runs for a couple of weekends at Warehouse 21. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi again. Great.
Good to have you back. And Tom Romero is here. He is an actor in this musical, or I guess, what do you say, actor musician in this musical. Now, this is based on a wonderful book, which I remember reading a million years ago by Studs Terkel, which was basically, it was called Working, and it was just basically all kinds of people in every job talking about what they do. And it is a stunning book, and it gives you kind of, even though it's now dated, it gives you such an insight into what people's lives are like that you never really hear about.
Right, and that book came out in 1974, and then they created a Broadway show around it, which opened in 1978. Yes, but it's important to know that the characters in the play, they're all based on those interviews, and the words that they're speaking are the actual words from the interviews with Studs. And even the music, even though there's five different composers, they all tried to be true also to the spirit of the character that Studs interviewed.
Now, one of the things that people will notice when they go see the musical is that it's not exact words, because it's got webcams and cell phones and things that didn't exist in 1974.
Yes, although I have to say that the libretto that we're going off of is copyrighted in 1978, and that verbiage about the webcam was in the original 1978 libretto.
That is simply not true, because there are no webcams in 1978.
Well, there you have it. So I don't know. It's in here. It has, the show has been updated over the years many times.
Well, it's a wonderful and fascinating show, and it is, I mean, you guys didn't obviously write the adaptation of the book, but it is a wonderful variety of people, of professions in it, from prostitute to steel worker to housewife. I mean, it's really America.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point, is to show America and show these individual workers that make up this great country, and that are, you'll see by the end, it's pretty much in the beginning, in the first act, all these individual stories. But by the end, you can see how the value, which is one of Stud's themes, the value of each individual, and then what they can do, create together. At the end, we see New York City, we see his beloved Chicago, you know, what they've been able to do by working together, and that every one of those people, even though their job may seem insignificant, that actually put together as a whole, they're contributing to the fabric of society.
How did you choose this particular play?
Well, first of all, Tom brought me the idea, and
I thought... How did you become aware of it?
I did it 30 years ago.
Really?
And we were thinking about it, and I was thinking, it still seems like it's very relevant today. You know, especially for those who are lucky enough to work now. It was like, when you were talking about that, I'm like, well, all that stuff is still... reading it now, I'm like, that's still really vibrant and real.
Right.
People still have the same attitude about their jobs when the secretary talks about nobody's loyal anymore, you know.
Right.
And I thought it'd be really timely also because of the work situation around the country now, and people, so many people being out of work.
Right.
And other people being, I feel, exploited and underpaid and overworked. And
ever more so.
Ever more so.
We thought it was bad in 1978.
Yeah, history repeats itself.
History repeats itself indeed. I mean, mill workers, now factory workers. It'd be interesting to do. An international version one of these.
Well, it would, because factory workers aren't working here anymore.
Yeah, right.
And mill workers, I don't know if there are any mills. There are. I know there are, but not like there were. And
now, when you first did this, Tom, did you play any of the same roles that you're playing now?
I can't remember. You know, I think I played the UPS guy. That much I remember.
Oh, you did.
And I played guitar on the song Un Mejor Día.
Right.
And sang with that. But I kind of can't remember what else I did. It's an odd musical in that sense, because I didn't play Mike. That I know.
Which he's playing now.
Playing.
Right. So I played an array of characters. Mm-hmm. And the characters don't talk to each other, per se. You know.
Right.
Which is...
Although they sing with each other.
They sing with each other.
Right. And I picked up on Tom's suggestion to do this. It's very different than anything Santa Fe Rep has done so far. But I love the message, the underlying message of it, again, that each individual has worth, each individual counts. It's kind of singing the unsung hero. They talk about that we hear these stories from all these people that maybe we take for granted. We never really think about how they're contributing and what they're doing. And so I like that, and I think it has some interesting themes about you know, how we judge other people by what they do, how people speak about other people. I mean, it's interesting. My initial reaction to the script was to make some changes, because I thought it was so politically incorrect, the way they're talking to each other and the way some of these people speak. But I think, you know, that's the point of it, is to hold the mirror up to see really how these real people speak and how we judge people. And then also, like the housewife, is it enough to be a housewife? You know, is that enough in this society? And, you know, the theme of dreaming, your ambition versus contentment. You know, I mean, I have that myself. You know, how ambitious, how much do you want to achieve in this lifetime versus, you know, where you're going to settle? Where are you going to find contentment? So all those issues.
I was thinking when that song was being sung, that very song to which you're referring, that question of what am I settling for and how much can I really achieve and where have I cut my dreams off is probably true for really the people at the highest level as well as ordinary people. I mean, everybody is continually wrestling with that question.
Right.
Who has that spark of ambition of any in any way?
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that ever changes, yeah. No matter what level you get to.
Yeah, exactly.
Those people are very competitive at high levels of whatever.
Right, but that's the quote I was looking for. I guess I didn't bring it, but Stud says that is a very common theme, no matter what socioeconomic level you're at, that everybody wants to find fulfillment in their work.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's, in this show, you'll see some people are content, find fulfillment in their work. Other people are very disgruntled and unhappy and wondering about what they could have done, how they could have achieved more. So it's an I think it poses some interesting questions.
Indeed it does, and it's also the kind of musical that you can stage with kind of minimal props and making very creative use of the props that you've got.
Right. I know Tom and I were just talking about that, you know, sometimes Santa Fe Rep does these big undertakings, like Pippin was quite an undertaking, but, you know, you can't always do big shows. This is a smaller show, but, again, focuses on the actor, on the book, on the writing, on the music, which is, again, five different composers from James Taylor to Stephen Schwartz. And so there's some beautiful music.
Now, was all the music composed for the show?
Yes.
It was. And it's interesting because you'll recognize some of the James Taylor pieces like Millwork and Brother Trucker. You'll recognize some of these. But I've since learned, I think he wrote them for the show, but then later released them on some of his albums
like Traffic Jam being
Yeah, like Traffic Jam is another
right,
one.
Right, that's
yeah.
right.
And a lot of the words that the actual people in the book used are in the songs themselves as well. So they pulled from the book to put them actually in the songs.
Now, did you, for example, Tom, for your parts, go back to the Studs Terkel book and immerse yourself in it?
No. I read parts of the book.
And what I did, too, as director, I copied the chapters in the book that each character, so the actors could
right.
read the chapters.
Right, right.
For
so
homework.
You got to know your
I got
guys.
To know them, and my guy is actually a couple of guys pieced together. One guy being a factory worker, and the other guy being an iron worker. But I didn't immerse myself into the book, no. I prefer to use the script and go from that and in my own honest interpretation of it.
Right, right. Yeah, that is a very affecting piece, The Iron yeah. Worker, because there's so many, I mean, within any given profession, there's all kinds of ego. And that's one
right.
of the things that comes out in this piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last song, which you didn't hear, they talk about, see that building. I built that building.
Right.
That's a piece of me. I think it's such a universal theme, and this, I think about that. It's like everybody wants to have ownership of what they do every day. We do it, you know. We don't all love our jobs. I don't love my job. You know, I work 40 hours a week. But you,
sure
you do.
You want to say that on air, Tom?
They'll all be working. They know how I feel about it. But you want to feel like you have a part in something when, you know, that at the end of the day you've done something, that,
right.
that it's a piece of me, you know, that there's a reason I'm here 8 hours a day, every day, 40
okay,
hours a
this,
week.
Okay, this is a good lead on it. I will read this one Studs Terkel quote. He says, when you become part of something, in some way you count. It could be a rally, even a something brief part of something, but you suddenly realize you count. To count is very important. So that's an underlying theme that no matter what we choose to do as a profession, that we feel like we're making a difference in this world.
So the musical is called Working, Working the Musical, People Talk About What They Do and How They Feel About It, from the book by Pulitzer Prize winner Studs Terkel. And it's October 4th and 6th.
That's right. We're not, there's no Friday night, so it's this Thursday,
okay.
Saturday 4 and 8, Sunday at 4, but next weekend it will be Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8, and then Saturday and Sunday again at 4.
Okay. And if you didn't remember all that, you can go to sfrep.org, and you can also call for reservations 505-629-6517. And Christy Carson is Artistic Director of Santa Fe Rep and Director of Working. Tom Romero is actor and musician in the musical. And should we go out with just a few bars of some of the music from this musical?
Sure, okay. Great.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
I'm very happy now to welcome back to the show Laura Tarnoff, Sherwin Tarnoff, and Miriam Fader. They're all with the Tarnoff Art Center, which is near Roe, near Pecos, New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
We're delighted. Thank you.
It's a terrific place, and we just wanted to let people know about it. And we had you on, what, a couple of years ago,
I think. Yeah, it's been a few years now.
It's been a few years. So what's going on at the Tarnoff Art Center?
Since we spoke with you, I think we were just embarking on our partnership with the Pecos Schools. They have a very limited art program out at their school. And so we had forged a partnership with them, and they were bringing the kids after school. And I think we were just getting ready for a three-week intensive summer program with the middle schoolers.
Right.
And it was all brand new, and it went great. And we had a huge art show, and the whole community came. And we did it for three years. We've done it for 3 years.
So this is yet another example of nonprofits filling in where the school systems leave off.
Yeah. And I almost felt like it was maybe even a little better than what traditionally can be offered in a school, because we had a variety of instructors that are all professional artists and, you know, elders from their community that came in and offered them a variety of things. You know, we had welding, we had ceramics, we had painting. So, and it was a variety of people. So it wasn't just one instructor. It was many people from the community teaching the children of their community.
And so you've got now a thriving group of young artists out in the Pecos area?
I think so. I think we transformed lives, for sure. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. So what are the kind of things, Sherwin, that you teach?
Well, I teach basically industrial arts, which is welding and art. And the kids in our area have not been exposed to any of that. They have no concept of careers in that field or going on in the engineering or actually becoming welders. And we introduce that to them with our modern shop. We have the most modern, up-to-date equipment in every phase of welding. And we have some extremely good teachers who are not only welding teachers but are artists in their own right. So our first decision on our teachers is the fact that they have to be artists.
Right.
And second, they have to be welding experts. So the kids get exposed to a wonderful degree of industrial arts and technology that they don't get in their schools any longer.
Which is very important, I think, because there's a lot of, I mean, I was talking to somebody who was telling me that in most of Europe, or perhaps all of Europe, if you are going to be an architect, you have to study art history and things like that, whereas here you study the engineering and you learn how to build a building, and so all these ugly metal buildings go up here because nobody has that sense of aesthetics. So if somebody goes on, for example, to be a welder, they'll bring beauty with them.
Exactly. They have to have the concept of what they're doing. We were very fortunate this year in the fact that Los Alamos National Laboratories awarded us a grant for technology in the welding field. So they felt it was important, as we do, in helping the children understand that. We also have complete industrial programs for people who want to learn how to weld, adults want to learn in specific fields, and we have that also.
Do you have some younger people who've really taken to it?
Yes, we do. We have some that are very, very good at it. And we encourage them to go on to engineering because to be an engineer, you should know how to apply the things that you're learning.
Absolutely. Miriam, what do you teach?
Well, I've assisted. I've taught in other places, but I've assisted Laura in her classes. And Laura and Sharon both understand that my focus is process. We try to teach skills, but I believe that if the process is good, the outcome is going to be good, because we believe that art is at the center of learning and art is the cornerstone of learning as far as teaching children communication skills, as far as giving children a sense of who they are and a sense of success in what they do.
What do you mean by process?
Well, process is that how the art is produced. It's not just the end product that we're looking at, but we are looking at how the kids interact, how the kids learn new aspects of the skills that they're going to be doing, how the kids are expressing themselves. And during all of this, they are also learning skills that are all transferable. So if these processes are integrated into the child, then we know we are doing our job. I can't say we've done our job, because learning and art is a lifetime experience.
That's
it's
right.
Ongoing.
And Laura, what are you teaching?
I, for the most part, was teaching the after-school and summer program with the middle schoolers, and studio arts, painting, drawing, and there were other people. Linda Feeman was teaching pottery. She's a master ceramicist that lives in Glorieta. And then also Bob Casillas was teaching Anasazi pottery with the kids.
Nice.
So he digs up his own clay, and he's an anthropologist, and he talked about the ancient cultures, and they did a pit firing. And
so these kids are out digging up clay.
No, he brought the clay. We didn't have
okay.
If we had enough time, I'm sure he would,
you know,
and enough resources. But, you know, but he did teach, they did do the pit firing, and he taught the Anasazi techniques and the history.
So yeah. You've got ongoing classes that are open. Is it mostly people from the area, I guess?
That are offering the classes?
That are taking the classes.
We actually, I don't know if you want me to mention this as well, but we hooked up with a wonderful resource here in Santa Fe called Santa Fe Creative Tourism.
Uh-huh.
And we've been posting our things on their website, and we ended up having a lot of visitors from other states this summer.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's been a great resource, and we're so grateful for that. And we're trying to figure out how to get more people from other places to come to the Art Center and take our intensive and weekend workshops. But we have specific things that we market to and offer to locals. It's part of our mission as an art center to have things that are affordable in the community there. So we have like open classes on weeknights that are really affordable.
And you got a lot of people showing up?
No, we don't. So
Not yet.
But on Monday nights we offer drawing and painting. These classes are from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday we have ceramics, Wednesday we have metal, and Thursday we have guitar. And those, we're thinking, are for people who live right in the area and who come home from work and want to take a class and get involved in the arts right there at home. So that's why we have that offered to the community. And then we have weekend workshops that are really great for locals that live in Santa Fe to come on a Saturday and a Sunday.
What's an example of one of those?
Well, we usually have one each month in each studio. So, for example, we have hand building and wheel throwing with Brad Gray coming up. And then we have a painting workshop with Issa Nyapaga coming up in
Issa.
Yeah,
Issa Nyapaga from
yeah.
Cameroon.
Yeah, uh-huh. So he's teaching an intensive workshop and a weekend one in October.
He's the one who does body painting,
right.
And he paints these giant canvases on the ground. He's a force of nature.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have such fabulous people out there. We're so honored.
So it's all the Tarnoff Art Center, and for more information, you can go to tarnoffartcenter.org. Anything else you want to let people know about?
Yeah, another free thing we offer, I mean, low cost, but this is free, that we offer to locals and to the community is once a month we have something we call an art explosion. And it's on the third Saturday of every month. And the group has collected latex paint and roof tar and plaster and all kinds of unconventional materials. And we have particle board, and everybody's encouraged to come and really cut loose and use materials that aren't expensive so that they will sort of be creatively free for the day.
Right.
And we've been doing that for 2 years now. So.
And have people come up with some cool stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been great.
And can I say, I'm really very focused on process also. Mm-hmm. And that is process. Working with those materials and seeing what's happening and not necessarily having an outcome in mind. So you can't hide process there.
Right.
So, and that's what we try to do with the children also. And I don't know, Laura, do you want to say anything about the scholarships that we do award to children?
Yeah, uh-huh. We actually were very fortunate to have raised some money this last spring by some generous anonymous donors. And we had a 10-week first through fifth grade summer camp all summer long, 10 weeks, and 9 kids came for free this summer to camp all summer long.
On scholarship.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Laura Tarnoff, Sherwin Tarnoff, and Miriam Fader, thank you so much for being with us. And once again, Tarnoff Art Center. And is there a number that you'd like to give for more information?
Yeah. We have a website that has all of our up-to-date activities on there. It's tarnoffartcenter.org. Our phone number is 505-919-8888. And we have a fabulous Facebook page, too. Check that out.
Thank you, guys, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.